Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome everybody today to On Point with your host and co-host, Ron Edwards, and myself, Donald Allen. Hey, Mr. Edwards, how you doing today?
Fine, Don. We're in the midst of some tornadoes and heavy rain showers up here in Minnesota. I know you're out there in our nation's capital, if you will, with the politicians, the movers and shakers. You and I both had an interesting week, early part of the week. I'm in Kansas City observing some of the NAACP, but actually I was there for a big junior amateur golf tournament. But how's it out in D.C.?
D.C. is hot, humid, and this morning, you know, they have the search for Carmen San Diego. We went on a search for Congressman Keith Ellison, and he was nowhere to be found. We staked out a coffee shop that he has been known to frequent, and to see the personnel who he might be hanging with, and we did not see him this morning.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah, so the hunt has ended. But other than that, you know, they had an earthquake here in D.C.
Yes, yes. What was it, 3.4?
3.4, and we're actually, I'm actually 24 miles away from the spot. Hopefully we'll get Dr. John Logan. We'll call in a little bit later in the show. He wants to give a little update on that, and we can go from there. What's going on with BP and the oils?
For our listening audience, first time in 3 months, allegedly the well has been capped. They were successful. There's been allegedly now no oil gushing into the Gulf of Mexico in the last 48 hours. CNN is reporting that the cleanup has intensified, if you will. They're bringing in a significant number of ships and equipment to skim and et cetera. So for the first time in 3 months, allegedly, BP has taken care of what it had said 3 months ago it was going to be able to take care of.
Okay. Now, does this mean that, I'm just trying to figure out what's going to happen to the oil that's already out there. Are there cleanup efforts?
What I'm saying. Yes, yes. There are numerous ships. Massive, there's a couple of massive tankers that have been brought in that have tremendous technical capability to skim the oil. Now, what they do with the oil after they skim it, Don, and put it in barrels, only you and I can guess, okay? Because it's clear that BP is going to try to pass on the cost of a bill that's now at $3 billion. They're going to try to pass that on to their customers. But there's been a lot of discussion about that BP stations, both franchise and independently owned, are taking some real hits around the country.
Yeah, and that's not a good thing. Well, we have a lot of interesting things going on in the Twin Cities, especially in Minnesota with the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And we're very welcome to have the Executive Director of Springboard Development Corporation, Mr. Lenny Chisholm, calling in to kind of talk about some things because, you know, last week on IBNN, we had a story that said Minnesota Department of Transportation and Mary Prescott, Civil Rights Director, strike
Yeah. Three,
they're out. And Mr. Chisholm, welcome to On Point.
Well, thanks for having me on the show there, guys.
Yeah.
Welcome, Lenny. All right, go ahead, Don. Finish it up. Go lay it out for us.
Yeah, well, we're just trying to find out. IBNN intercepted some documents that said, like, somewhere in the area of $116 million for disadvantaged business enterprises went to other folks other than the minority ethnic community or black people. Lenny, can you kind of explain that and kind of set that up of how that could happen or what the details were?
Well, from what I gathered, and I did receive the document myself,
okay.
This was coming from the Department of Transportation. It's the document they have to turn into the federal government to detail how the money was allocated under Title VI requirement. So that any and all DBEs could participate. The staggering number was it started in October 1st, 2009, and went all the way through to March 31st, 2010.
Okay.
$116 million in contracts were awarded for transportation work, which contained federal dollars. And under Title VI, we have not participated in those contracts previously, but this one was probably the worst yet. Out of the $116 million, it stated that African-American contractors received zero of that money, which I think is a tremendous problem because the dirty jobs of construction workers are supposed to be how the country's rebuilding itself. So the numbers, as it states, would should cause a lot of people to be outraged, given that we're not participating in the economic recovery process.
Okay, so does that mean that I understand that the regulation CFR 49 Part 26 states that a bidder makes good faith efforts to attract and collaborate with DBEs or minority ethnic businesses. Is that good faith effort really being monitored? Is it being enforced? I mean, in your eyes, I mean, what do you think is going on with that?
Well, there's a couple of things. According to the rules, the good faith efforts should be evaluated independently. So if contractor A and contractor B both submit a bid, we should be able to look at the good faith efforts to see if they have really reached out. And there's different ways. For instance, in areas of work that they would normally do, they could have a joint venture agreement put in place with a certified DBE. They could also unbundle the projects to manageable amounts so that more DBEs could participate. The other problem is, let's say if you're a welder, and that's your certification as a DBE, and you're a welder, and most people know what welders are, that's a component of a complete task. So if they're welding on a bridge, but it actually calls for something called pile driving, which is another process, there is no goal set for the task of welding. So the welder, even if he sent over his bid, he wouldn't be considered a valuable business under the good faith efforts because he's not performing a complete task, which is pile driving. So the Department of Transportation, Minnesota Department of Transportation, does not have to debundle these projects. That's left to the prime contractors. Now, the interesting part, and I'm getting a little winded, the interesting part about that is the FHWA Minnesota is the one who really is obligated to make sure that the Department of Transportation is in compliance and doing the good faith efforts. That is where the real problem is.
Ron Edwards here. Let me ask the question because I'm a little bit puzzled because I've been seeing, you know, documentation that talks about everything is in compliance, though on the front page of this week's Spokesman Recorder, there was a small demonstration out in Richfield against DOT and highway project out there. But let me go back just a tad. Was this a part of the problem that took place with the Laurie Avenue Bridge and apparently some sanctions against the state of Minnesota and Hennepin County because of inconsistent and inaccurate reporting? Was that a part of what happened up there?
To a degree, what happened on the Lowry Bridge was they put together a local hiring preference where they combined a couple nonprofit OICs together under this process. And when the information was reviewed by the Federal Highway Administration, they said this violates the Federal Highway Guidelines for putting people on a job site. Now, those local hiring preferences are not allowed under federal laws, and I'm not sure how they finally worked out under Minnesota law. But the real issue was they defederalized the project of $10 million. That $10 million may have went to other projects, but that particular one was defederalized of that $10 million. Here's the interesting part about that. There was also $25 million of Build America bonds on that project. And once it was defederalized, the Build America bonds do not fall under Title 6, 49 CFR Part 26, which is how the DBEs are supposed to participate.
I'm sorry to cut in, but we want to make sure our audience gets entire flavor. Now, Build America, was that a part of any of the stimulus package of February and March 2009?
Yes, they were.
Okay.
And with those bonds, because American taxpayers are paying 35% of every dollar, or roughly 35 cents of every dollar of interest payments on those Build America bonds, and when I contacted the Federal Highway Administration, they said, well, you may want to make a call to Secretary Geithner.
okay.
about that
All
because
right.
we are no longer required to monitor that $25 million in Build America bonds.
Okay. Okay. Talking about here in Minnesota.
Here in Minnesota.
Okay.
And that may
okay.
be a problem throughout the country because we have money that unless the stipulations say that a certain area of the, is supposed to monitor it, it may be being released without anyone monitoring it at all. So those Build America bonds are still left on the project. The $10 million was taken away, but those Build America bonds are still taxpayer dollars.
All right, bottom line, your initial comments, $116 million Minnesota Department of Transportation money is awarded, $0. I want to make sure our listening audience is fully engaged in this. You're saying the documentation, it's not something that Lenny made up or a bunch of guys standing on Plymouth Avenue, that $0 went to the African-American community?
Absolutely $0, unless you look at somehow they've awarded them through jobs on the site with some of the contractors, but actual
uh-huh.
contractor awarded dollars, which have been subcontractors because they would not have been primes, it states that $0 were awarded. And I asked the question, I said, how can you award $116 million and zero, and that's considered good faith efforts, and the Department of Transportation still be in compliance with the federal guidelines if, not,
where,
if all
where
parties
should,
aren't being included?
Where should our federal congresspersons, both McCollum in St. Paul and Keith Ellison in Minneapolis, the 4th and the 5th Congressional District, and our two black legislators in the Minnesota House, where should they be on this? I mean, it's taken 6 weeks to have any discussion about a very devastating research study on the disparity between African Americans being hired for employment here in the metropolitan area. It took 5 weeks for folks to really finally write something about it. Can I ask you, Lenny, are our legislators, our federal and state legislators on top of this, and will both Congressman Ellison and State Representative Bobby Joe Champion be holding public hearings on this, to the best of your knowledge?
Best of my knowledge, that no one is addressing this issue right now in the area, particularly Congressman Ellison or the State Representative Champion or State Representative Hayden. It's
wow.
very perplexing because when you have someone who's supposed to represent the interests of their constituents, and their constituents are largely African American in many cases, then the adequate representation in the room between the hours of 8 and 5 is brought into question. Well,
mm-hmm.
if they've been elected to do that, then who are they representing? Their constituents
right.
aren't getting jobs.
Right. Lenny, I certainly appreciate your response to my series of questions. Mr. Allen, I pass it back to you.
I'd just like to let people know that the letter to Daryl Turner, who is the division administrator for the Federal Highway Administration, the Minnesota Division, can be seen at www.ibnnnews.com. We actually have the letter from MnDOT's Acting Director of Civil Rights, Mary Prescott, and you can read the article and actually view the letter. We photographed it as a picture and put it online so that our listeners and readers would know that we are dealing with factual documented evidence. And another thing I'd like to interject real quick here is that, you know, I don't understand, you know, with Mr. Representative Bobby Joe Champion being the on the vice chair of the Transportation Oversight Committee, the state legislature there, why he isn't doing what he needs to do. And if our words are pointless, as he told someone 2 weeks in a coffee shop in North Minneapolis, his actions are definitely pointless. So with that,
I'd like to interject one piece on that before I get off here. When I spoke with the Representative Champion, he said that, no, those numbers are not accurate. We did get contracts. And I said, okay, I'll take your word for it. Why don't you prove it so we can all look at the numbers, so we can all see where the contracts went. I don't think, based upon what I've seen, how the inaccuracy could have taken place. But if it is inaccurate, I'd like to know exactly how much we got so we can all have a better conversation. The question becomes, if you're in the room representing that you're representing a group of people from 8 to 5 in the legislature where public policy is being shaped and also written on a daily basis, then we want to see better representation because at zero, our community has no jobs, and the only thing we can expect is crime. And that is what's currently happening in those districts.
All right. Okay.
All right.
Mr. Allen, are we to assume, and thank Mr. Chisholm, we appreciate your calling in, sir, as we're kind of doing this crisscross the country program today.
Thank you for having me. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Allen, am I to understand that basically what is being said by the state representative, that Mr. Turner of the Federal Highway Administration had the wrong figures?
I mean, that's what it looks like. When you look at this, I'm looking at a letter right now dated May 27, 2010, from the Division Administrator of Federal Highway Administration, Minnesota Division, Daryl Turner. And what it says, it's a report from Mary Prescott saying that...
Let's be clear. Mary Prescott, civil rights officer for the Department of Transportation, state of Minnesota, right?
So, yes. And if she is reporting falsehoods, as I said in my story, strike three, she's out. Because if you cannot make your annual goals 6 months into the year, how are you going to make them with the last 6 months left?
Absolutely.
And these people have not adhered to CFR 49 Part 26, which basically says make it happen by any means necessary. And they have sidestepped, obstructed, blocked, denied access to African-American contractors for MnDOT, even as far as breaking it out in tasks. CFR 49 Part 26 gives Minnesota Department of Transportation the opportunity to take that bid for that project and break it out in a task. So if they have some people from Summit Academy that know how to roll wheelbarrows and shovel dirt into them, because, you know, I've seen these 100 hard hats and their uniforms are clean. Okay, like they
Yes, right. Well, you can see that in the newspaper article.
Haven't have a scratch on their hard hats. So if you have those guys that are shovel ready, you know, you put out a task of moving that mound of dirt over here or cleaning up this area or working on this highway, and you employ these guys for a number of years on a project. MnDOT, the Civil Rights Department, Bernie over there, Thomas Sorrell, they seem like they totally want to bypass the whole process.
One of the things we may be able to get in the remaining time of the program, we have about 43 minutes left.
Yes.
Maybe we can get former candidate Kenya McKnight, who was on the Good Faith Committee and stayed on that committee after Mr. Chisholm was removed because he was raising the wrong kinds of questions as it pertains to pass-throughs. Maybe Kenya McKnight can give us a call and kind of indicate what her thinking is as a member of the Good Faith Committee, which is crucial to kind of carrying water as it pertains to these continued zero figures. And I want to repeat that, these zero figures. Now, I don't know why Mary Prescott would report a $116 million versus $0 to the African-American community. She'd have to be insane, or she'd have to be extremely honest and extremely vigilant, if you will. But maybe we can get a call in from Kenya McKnight and kind of help us out on this.
Well, Mr. Everett, I'd like to interject. In 2009, I was invited by a couple of people to go up to one of the Good Faith Effort meetings, and where Kenya McKnight was actually present.
Okay.
And I had got an opportunity to interject some information about why they aren't following policies or procedures. And at that particular meeting, I said, well, who's enforcing this with the contractors?
Uh-huh.
And they said, well, we have this form here where we mail to the contractors and they send us back information on who they talked to, minority ethnic or DBEs, and we put it in the file. And it just led me to ask them, well, how long is this form being used? Uh-huh. This was second quarter last year. They said, well, we just started it this week.
Kind of reminds me of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department and the current controversy that they are engaged in with respect to not being able to produce the both timesheets and Social Security numbers for all those people of color that allegedly worked on the Twins target field, if you will. I'm just not sure how it is, though, that our two elected state legislators have really not been pounding on this issue, and they certainly had an opportunity in the last session, which of course ended a couple of months ago. But during the summer months, you certainly have the authority and power, as Mr. Chisholm pointed out, to call public hearings within your legislative districts, if you will, and raise this question. I don't know, maybe this is something we may have to raise to Senator Higgins, who I happened to see her at a function of the other night, and she was passing out some excellent material and et cetera. Maybe we will have to, in the case of the 58th senatorial district, maybe we'll have to turn to Senator Linda Higgins and ask her if she would consider calling a public hearing so that we can get a better understanding of what the heck is happening here. I mean, $116 million being paid out, and African Americans not being allowed to get a single penny. I mean, it's just outrageous. But if the state representative, Mr. Champion, Representative Champion, is saying that those documents or those numbers are inaccurate, then I think that the public deserves and reserves the right to see the correct numbers.
Yes, and also I would just like to remind the listeners our 1-800 toll-free number is 1-877-572-4288. Again, that toll-free number anywhere in the world, 1-877-572-4288. And yeah, I just about the Minnesota in closing on Minnesota Department of Transportation, I find that very interesting that again we get zero. It's the same thing happened last year with the Obama stimulus dollars. There's $600 million into the Department of Transportation and less than 300,000. Now get me. $600 million in, less than 300,000 to DBEs, and the DBEs that received the dollars, less than 400,000, were companies ran by white women who are considered minorities.
Right, which got Mr. Chisholm into trouble. And if I'm not mistaken, you reported that on your blog site about 4 months ago, and he didn't get any kind of support, which was interesting. And the only news coverage was from our respective news entities, if you will, and he was kind of left out there. By the way, I just want to say again on the record, we certainly appreciate Mr. Chisholm calling in and providing this information that the public needs to have.
Yeah, and just one more thing. You had mentioned the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights. Their new executive director Velma Corbell.
Yes.
She has not answered the last email that was sent by IBNN and the National Research Institute. Target Field. And on next week, we plan on forwarding her another email to ask her for the list of site visits, dates and times to the Target Field to check compliance by their compliance manager.
Let me do this. I can update us on that. What happened was is that what she did under direct orders, I assume, from the Office of the Mayor, she sent a packet of material to the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, and this material allegedly contained information relevant to the workforce on the Twins Target Field. Unfortunately, it did not include names and Social Security numbers, and to the credit of the Spokesman Recorder, they've indicated that they cannot necessarily go with that information absent, and I repeat that, absent names and particularly Social Security numbers and other kind of payouts. Now, you got to remember, one of the key players from the African-American community in this was the brother of Lynn Littlejohn, who was a major contractor, subcontractor. In fact, he received, and we reported this time and time again, the largest amount of any quote-unquote African-American other than Thor,
yes.
Which is Mr. Copeland. And that is our Mr. Littlejohn, the brother of Miss Littlejohn, who is the community affairs director for Mortenson, the legendary Mortenson. He received something like $2.2 million. And, you know, we keep asking the question, where is the documentation? Now, they will say to you now that the documentation was sent to the Spokesman Recorder. I hope that the Spokesman Recorder not only prints that information, but comes up with some of the names of some of the many, 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 many African Americans that allegedly worked on the Target Center for the 2 years of preparation.
Okay, and speaking on that, you had just brought up something about Mortenson, and just to kind of move the show on, because we only have an hour show today, and we have about 35 minutes left, but we're trying to get this all in. I attended the meeting Thursday night at the Capri Theater with Mortenson, the Minneapolis Public Schools, and Missing in Action was not only Legacy, but the community. So the
what'd you have, about 11, 12, 13, 14 community people?
Well, we had less than that. They had more. They had about, I went up to the gentleman there, Tom. I said, hey, you have 12 people here representing the school board, the design team, and your public relations arm, and you have six community members.
Wow.
And six? You have two media people. And so
wow.
I'm saying, what's wrong with the outreach here? And why aren't you telling people that you're having this? In all reality, anyone that has a child in the Minneapolis public schools should be at these meetings, because how can they rationalize building a 100+ million building in North Minneapolis and our children of color aren't even graduating from high school?
Absolutely not. Absolutely. In fact, we're getting ready to lose North. I mean, everybody knows that. They don't want to talk about it. Everybody knows that. Well, I understand that at that meeting Thursday night, I understand that an African-American stepped to the plate, because the story had been told to us 5 weeks ago when we were there at that infamous meeting that there would be no forced evacuation, if you will, or in this case, eviction. I understand an African-American citizen who has a house right there on what's going to be the parking lot indicated that they had basically been told that they accept whatever offer is given or the city will invoke eminent domain. Is that correct, Don? Did that actually happen?
I'm going to tell you what happened. His name is Charles. I interviewed him. Where his house is, a parking lot will be at for the new Minneapolis district headquarters, public school district headquarters. And
okay.
He says he does not want to move. And
okay.
He is very nervous because Tom from Mortensen has been to his home to talk to him. And he says, you know what, man, if I don't move, they're just going to take my house eminent domain. He actually did an interview that you can see right on the Blog Talk Radio profile page, right where if you're listening to this show now, just scroll down and you'll see a video of a gentleman sitting there in a complete theater who gave IBNN News and On Point an exclusive interview, and that he was really nervous. And they also had a older Caucasian gentleman in the audience sitting in the second row who had to be in his late 80s, who stood up and says, you guys are getting paid too much money. You don't need a new school building. And he got
wow.
and walked out. And
okay.
We also have that on tape, and we're going to release that next week.
All right. Don, would you give that website again?
Okay, you can see it in two places. You can see it at blogtalkradio.com on this show page. For those of you that are tuned in, it's right there at the bottom. There's a video. And you can also see it at ibnnnews.com.
All right. You know, we had some controversy here. Probably want to spend a couple minutes with it. We've talked about it as part of our pre-preparation.
Yes.
Story, front page, Metro section indicates that a reported kidnapping and assault was, in fact, a prank. Have you had an opportunity to review that report down out there in Washington?
Yes, I did review the report in Star and Tribune today, posted at 10:27 p.m. actually last night by Abby Simmons. Kidnapping turns out to be a prank. Now, Mr. Edwards, I read this very closely. I read the statements by Mr. Palmer, and again, we had talked about this last week, that people from North Minneapolis, as far as the court system is concerned, are from another planet. Their words have no credibility. Now what the Star and Tribune and the Minneapolis Police Department has done to the black community in North Minneapolis is gave us zero credibility. And, I mean, they got our back against the walls, you know. And so what happens when this happens for real? You know, we hope it doesn't. But there's going to be skepticism. People aren't going to believe what's happening. And someone might get killed behind, you know, these pranks and these things going on. So it just doesn't make any sense to me.
It doesn't to me either, and I felt bad for our community with respect to the way the story was angled. For our listening, both domestic and international audience, the newspaper this morning reported an incident that allegedly took place late Thursday night here in the Twin Cities, in North Minneapolis, in fact, right at Broadway and Lindale Avenue North, in the vicinity of the filling station that is there, and Merwin's drugstore.
Yeah.
Witnesses indicated that a young African American woman was seen attempting to flee from an automobile. She had duct tape on her wrist, duct tape on her ankles, and the duct tape was hanging off the side of her face. In other words, someone had tried to duct tape her mouth. She was set upon. She was then thrown in the trunk of the car. Witnesses were able to give a description of the automobile's make and coloring, and had a couple of both alphabet and number off of the license. Apparently, the woman attempted to escape again. On Friday here in the Twin Cities, there was an all-points bulletin. A number of law enforcement agencies were on the alert. The police department was asking for assistance. They had a number. The news shows on Thursday did highlight it, and et cetera. According to the copyrighted story in this morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, sometime late yesterday afternoon, there was confirmation, or at least that's what the Star is saying, that it was all a prank by members of a local church here. And on the front page of the Metro section is the minister of that church, the Reverend Jerry McAfee, who obviously was greatly distraught by what he was being told, that these individuals were identified in the article as members of his church. But it was the mean-spirited crafting, if you will, by the trip and by Sergeant Palmer, and talking in terms that the community had wasted a lot of valuable time of and energy and resources of the police department, because they could have been going out looking at legitimate issues. Now, this is a city in which 80% of the homicides of African Americans in this city are still without any suspects. Okay, and by the way, on that particular note, again, for our domestic and international audiences, we had two more homicides last weekend. In fact, as we were on the air last Saturday, shootings were going on. We had a Hispanic shot to death by a bouncer in Northeast Minneapolis, and we had three African Americans shot at an address on the far north side around 39th and Thomas or thereabouts. And then we had, by the way, Don, three additional shootings later on that night, including a shooting out in Robbinsdale. And so we can just say that on Saturday / into Sunday, we had seven people shot, two fatal, okay? But I'm puzzled by the statement about that the black community is misusing resources, because I said before, the number stands at 80% of the African-American fatalities in this town, which are basically of the 28 or 29 or 30, depending on who you talk to, that over 20 of those are African-Americans, have yet to produce, quote-unquote, a suspect. And so I'm a little puzzled, but I know that this is what the system has been waiting on. This also goes to the issue, Don, that we talked about last week, of the mental health debate that is now going on within the white medical and mental health communities, that that the African American community has some mental health problems.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that you brought up there, you talked about you know, Palmer getting on the Star Tribune, and they're just basically ripping the minority ethnic black community in North Minneapolis a new rear end. I have to refer to the open letter written by Minneapolis City Councilman Don Samuels. It's an open letter to the killers of Anthony Titus, where he goes in his tirade about how much it's going to cost to track you down, how much it's going to cost. Do you know how much money you will cost us?
Right.
Your two incarcerations could cost over $1 million. It could cost additional $300,000 to catch, apprehend, and convict you both. If you have children, it could cost hundreds of thousands of dollars more to support them to adulthood. And it sounds like the same language coming from Councilman Samuels that's coming from Palmer, you know. And I really have a good rebuttal for Samuels' article, but I just wanted to refer to that real quick. But, I mean, does anyone know the nucleus or why they would even attempt to pull something like this? It just doesn't make any sense, really.
It doesn't make any sense at all. I noticed that there were no names in this morning's copyrighted story. I assume in the coming days there may be some additional discussion. Of course, the article did point out that the police immediately gave the false reporting to the county attorney, and so Mike Freeman's people are looking at the possibility of filing criminal charges against the four individuals in question. I understand it would be three males and one female, the young lady who was in the duct tape. Though I'm being told by other sources that clearly something did happen, I don't know what it is, and we'll hold in abeyance any additional comment until I hear from those responsible individuals within that segment of the community, and particularly New Salem.
Okay. I had we're out here broadcasting from Washington D.C. and I just wanted to interject this piece out here. Never have I seen a group of talented, young, energetic black folks anywhere in the country. I mean, I've been in Atlanta, New York, lived in New York, lived in Denver, lived in Seattle, and I come out here to D.C. I meet a young guy, just got 24 years old, just got his master's degree in journalism. I meet an analyst for the U.S. government, and these people look no different than the people walking up and down the street to North Minneapolis, but somewhere something happened, and they got on A-track. I'm not going to say the right track or wrong track, but they got on A-track to be successful. And I was really impressed, and I just started talking to some of them. I says, well, one is a scientist. So she's a scientist here locally, and a scientist, actually. And I said, well, what, you know, she was explaining her childhood, how wild she was, running in the streets, you know, doing what. I said, what made you just stop? She says, well, you know, we had teachers at school that would pull us to the side and say, hey, you know what? If you do this, this is going to happen. But if you do that, is what's going to happen.
Okay.
And they put the fear in her enough to make sure that she knew that these books, was the education piece was important, but what was more important was that job. And on that note, I just read an article in the Star Tribune a couple of days ago. I don't have it pulled up right now, where Sandra Samuels had, who is Councilmember Don Samuels' wife, had talked about that education was the most important thing, and if they have education, they'll get a job. But yet, you know, she's in charge of the Peace Foundation and the Northside Achievement Zone, and we don't see any pipelines forming at this time to jobs or to successful measurable outcomes. We do see a lot of nonprofit meetings.
They meet. Yeah, they're good at meeting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they want to meet, get together, and show people who the pecking order, how it goes, but there's no successful measurable outcomes out of these meetings, and I haven't understood that. I probably never will. But you know, recently again, I called the Peace Foundation because again, I get a mysterious call on my phone from that number, and she doesn't want to talk about it, doesn't want to answer an email. Her and the councilman befriended me from Facebook. Of course, I did ask him to resign, but, you know, that's no reason to defend somebody from Facebook. but on that note, you know, I'm just kind of wondering what's going on, what's taking place here in North Minneapolis with these nonprofits just kind of running amok. Last week we had talked about the gentleman in the bar or the restaurant there where asked me, was I still alive?
And
another gentleman came to his defense, one of my other Facebook friends, and I'll leave him out of the mix at this point, but it's very interesting to see how these people are connected and work together because they're working for the same cause. Actually, it was the gentleman, the heavyset gentleman that was missing from the first school board meeting at
yes.
the Free Theater who actually showed up at this next one.
Oh, okay. He made it. He was with his new development buddy, former councilwoman Jackie Cherryon.
Yeah, she was also there at that meeting. And then just to touch on that meeting again, I asked him, Tom from Mortensen, I says, you know, the last meeting, one of my colleagues asked you about the licensing, insurance, and bonding, et cetera, that you said you would have in 2 weeks. And is that available? And he said, well, we're here today to talk about the design. And I said, well, I'm trying to find out where is the material that you said you'd have in 2 weeks. So he blew that one off. Then I said, can you explain the catalyst piece? And so
explain Catalyst so people, again, as part of our domestic and international audience, understand that Catalyst is the name of a nonprofit entity. Explain it to us again. Walk us through it.
Yeah, Catalyst is a nonprofit in North Minneapolis that The plan is that Mortenson Legacy, the Minneapolis Public School Development, is going to use them, or their 501c3 has kind of a tax shelter. So it kind of works like if they get a bond, if they secure a bond or some empowerment zone money or some dollars that are granted to
market tax, things like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They can't go to a for-profit corporation. They would have to go to a nonprofit. So they have picked Catalyst as the nonprofit. And Catalyst is a community development organization that has their hands in a little bit of everything, organized and incorporated by Mr. Stuart Ackerberg of the Ackerberg Group, who is also responsible for renting KMLJ FM. Their space over in North Minneapolis, they're on Penn. KMLJ does not own that building, as those of you, some of you are just finding out for the first time. And so my question posed to Tom is that, okay, Minnesota Statute 317A under nonprofit, forming a nonprofit and articles of incorporation, basically what you're saying is that you're using the Catalyst Group, because it's kind of a tax shelter, because if they get this thing, this money, or do this bond piece, and you get $25 million, and over the by the time the project's done, there's going to be an extra $1 million there in just interest. So this this nonprofit has the opportunity of walking away with an extra $1 million just for the use of their 501c3. And mm-hmm. my information to Tom is what I told him. I said, hey, why not the Minneapolis Urban League? Why not the Stair Step Foundation? Why not the City Inc.? Hey, why not KMLJ? They have a 501c3, but they view
right.
KMLJ enough to get the empowerment zone money to get that building and that new development done. So,
yes,
done issue. So they're going to move on to the next one, it looks like here. But it's always opportunities that are denied, taken away from us through groups like this. But then there's a flip side to that. These people are businessmen, and if we have a corrupt infrastructure already in place that you can give $2 or $3 for and say, hey, don't print that guy's article or don't talk to this guy over here, we're not going to get anything out of it.
Now, as a part of this, and by the way, how did Tommy respond to you when you indicated to him that he had lied about the role of Ackerberg? He lied. I mean, we're saying it here on Blog Radio that Mortenson, the head of Mortenson, making president, he's a liar. He lied in the meeting at the Capri 5 weeks ago, and by the way, it's been 5 weeks, and you're right, they never have come forward with the information with respect to their bonding and insurance. They have actually not sent it out for RFP, and there were a couple of black insurance and bonding underwriters who attempted 3 months ago to be placed on the bid list and were denied that opportunity, and I think they'll be forthcoming very quickly with formal litigation against the district and Mortenson. But, hey, that's their problem, not ours. But how did Tommy respond when you caught him in that lie?
He didn't. He basically stuttered, and remember all those silent moments we had at that first meeting?
Right.
Even though the meeting was only 35 minutes long, we had
you're talking about this last meeting was only 35 minutes?
35 minutes long, and we had probably about 8 minutes of silent time where no
okay.
questions could be answered.
All right. Don, could you give our number again in case we have anybody that wants to call in, pose any questions, examine some of the information we've been putting out?
Yeah, I have someone right now coming in. Let me just, again, our number to call in is 1-877-572-4288, or you can also call 1-347-462-3904. That's for local. But again, the toll-free number is 1-877-572-4288. Hello, caller. Where are you calling from? What's your name?
Hello, yes. David is my name. I'm calling from St. Paul. I've had the fortunate ability of working with Mr. Allen, Mr. Edwards. I don't think we've ever spoken before. I am a 31-year-old white male, born and raised in St. Paul. And so a lot of us who are from here, either, St. Paul kids or Minneapolis kids, on one side of the river or the other. Mm-hmm. But I guess my question is that I put into, the chat room that I'm going to say here, I have You know, two questions that's been just really bothering me, all right? The first one is that there are a lot of people in the entire north end of Minneapolis who are passionate, who are frustrated, who are irritated. But then there are a lot more who are just, you know, the, you know, followers, you know, the
lambs.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That just, you know, sit there, who don't do anything or don't say anything. And all they do is complain, you know. They don't. So I guess I know that there's authentic anger. I know there is a real outcry. But all you see is, you know, the everyday loudmouths that supposedly represent, you know, all the people of that side of town. I won't say who they are, but I think we all know who they are. And, you know, so what I'm saying, so I guess where is the real organization? Where are these, where are the actual, you know, there are these families who are, unfortunately, they have lost sons and daughters and, you know, fathers and mothers and stuff to, you know, all of the violence over there. Why don't the actual people who feel this passion, you know, who want to do something, you know, get organized? Don't depend on the city council. Don't depend on all those people. Do it yourself and get organized and take over North Minneapolis. And
right,
I just
okay.
want to know where that is.
All right. All right. Thank you. Don, you want to take the first shot at that? Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Thank you.
I have a second question, too.
Oh, go ahead. Well, go ahead with your
my second question is, I have a law enforcement background in this area, and I can speak that I am aware of a sort of a prejudice, a sort of a inner ethnic hatred between new young Somalian immigrants and what they think is Americanized African-American men. I guess, I don't know what they think. They have said that they don't think that they don't think African-Americans are actually, you know, African, you know, like them. They are Americanized, yada, yada, yada. And you see a lot of Somalian on American violence. And I don't know of anyone who's ever spoke about that.
Okay, Don, I'll handle that. You can handle first. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, David.
Thank
you. I'll see you next week when I get in town. Thanks for the call.
Okay, sounds good, sir. Thank you.
Okay.
Don, why don't you take the first one? I'll take the second.
Good, good. With 12 minutes remaining in the show, I'll take that first question. Part of this is that community organizing has changed and got a new name after President Obama won the presidency. Community organizing used to be done in little groups, and no one was intimidated. And great jobs, great things were done. But after it came out, that in my mind, that President Obama was a community organizer in Chicago and did all this great stuff with Acorn and whoever else, that people got a little bit intimidated and stepped away. Secondly, on that same note, there are organizations that we do have in North Minneapolis that could step up to the plate. But the problem is there's an intellectual capacity or a glass ceiling that they keep bumping their heads against. You can't really be mad at a new fellow that might come into the Minneapolis Urban League and does not know who the players are. And he has people whispering in one ear and in the other ear, and he's totally lost in outer space without a map. And so he can't address anything, because if he goes to the left, he's going to get circumvented. If he goes to the right, he's going to get circumvented. So he's stuck in purgatory. And until this person gets caught up to speed, you know, we're going to have gaps in organizing and addressing issues. But in the meantime, we're going to lose a whole lot, because they will not let go or bring in people that can advise them and help them. Like you said a couple of shows ago, you know, the black community in Minneapolis has no governmental research or think tank in Minneapolis that can sit down and put the pieces together to go after the right things to the left and to the right. So that's my answer for David. Thank you for calling.
Okay. Let me pick up on just a piece of that. Let me just pick up right away on the research piece. The African-American community allegedly should have a research component. It's called the Council on Black Minnesotans.
Yes.
Which has not been doing the job for a long time, and to his credit, Lucky Rosenbaum talks about that, but everybody tries to ignore him. on the question of the community organization piece, and then I'll move over to the Somali question. You know, yours truly is a graduate of the Alinsky School of Community Organization, which I feel very proud was a school and concept later embraced by the man now identified as president of these United States, Barack Obama. I came out of the University of Syracuse in 65 and 66. There was a very elite and small number of us who were certified as community organizers. So I know that whole history. And maybe one of these days when we do have a 90-minute program, somebody may call and ask a question. I'll give them the background on really what happened back in 1965 and 66 as the community organization concept was really being put together. Okay. As I said again, this is the same program that President Barack Obama came out of. All right.
Okay.
And it originated way back in 1924 by Saul Alinsky. It was called the Back of the Yards. And there's a whole history of that for those that know how to access it. The issue of the Somalis and et cetera, yes, there has been friction, if you will, and polarization amongst the Somali and African-American communities. But then there's been friction amongst all communities, particularly those that are newly arrived in the United States. The one uniqueness that we have, along with our Native American brothers, in the case of Black America, we didn't ask to come here, okay? In the case of the Native American, people came here, made many promises, and then proceeded to take his world and his land away from him. Others came here basically voluntarily, okay? They came to the promised land, all right? There are certain expectations that those that come from other countries have of what should be going on here. There are some, and I've been told this by some of my Somali brothers, they don't think that we're revolutionary enough, Don.
Yes.
That we in Black America are not revolutionary enough, that we should be out doing a whole lot of things that could bring this country to the edge of chaos. We try to educate and explain to them that there was a period of time, and two or three occasions in a 100-year period, in which the Negro community was very well organized and was very aggressive in pursuing, quote-unquote, our rights. But because of the way that history is structured in this country and because of the omissions, and we see it as an example of the whole story of Duluth, Minnesota, okay? 1920, three African-Americans taken from the county jail in St. Louis County, lynched, mutilated, and et cetera. You couldn't find that in the history books until some of us in the Black community in the 1970s, okay, began to point it out 50 years later. to the question by the caller, which it's a valid question, there is friction, there has been misunderstanding, there is hostility. But I saw that same friction when a new Asian population, Vietnamese and Hmong and et cetera, began to arrive in this country about 14, 15 years ago, coming into St. Paul, to a lesser degree the Twin Cities, when they came into California and et cetera. We see the same situation between African-Americans and Latino Hispanics and et cetera. You go to New York City, brothers there will tell you they had the same kind of problems amongst African-Americans and Puerto Ricans, right? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And so this is a part of what happens. The issue, though, is how did so much misunderstanding have a tendency to take place? What were the circumstances that created all of this misunderstanding, this polarization? Because basically what you had is a group of poor people all vying for the same piece of territory, okay? The same piece of territory. And that requires a conversation far beyond the 5 minutes that we have left here on point. But I think it's something that if our listening audience wants us to deal with on one of our 90-minute programs, it's certainly something that we would certainly do and examine. But you know what's important for community is to pick up the phone and call and ask the questions of us.
Exactly. Again, yeah. We have about 6 more minutes remaining in the show, and the number is 1-877-572-4288. We'd like to thank David for calling with those two very great questions. And some of these, you know, we had talked about this a little bit, Mr. Edwards, back and forth. Some of these issues people don't really want to address. It's like, you know, the folks, I used to say this, like the folks in Edina, if they can't see it, it's not there.
That's right.
and so if people can't accept this or understand it or even grasp that it's happening, you know, they're not going to call in. They're not going to comment on it. They're, you know, and I'm leading up to the point of where I think that, you know, next week, next Saturday, we will have a return to our 90-minute format, and then we're going to have to invite some guests on and let them talk about some topics and do the press release, do the whole media junket, because these issues and topics in the black community, especially in North Minneapolis, are real. They're happening. This is not fabricated, other than the kidnapping that happened last couple of days here. But, you know, the things that are happening going on, why are these people doing this? What is the psychology around it? You know, what's the reason? We already get enough bad press. The Star and Tribune or Johannesburg Times never really writes anything positive. But when there's a murder shooting or something, or, you know, we're on the front page of the newspaper. And also, you know, we have black reporters in town that work for mainstream media that are in front of cameras saying, yeah, crime is down.
Okay. Yeah. Like Red Chapman at CCO.
Yeah.
Let me do this right quick, maybe we'll spend more time on it. Got a comment in the 4 minutes we've got left to the controversy, and I praise the Reverend Jesse Jackson for his statements dealing with Dan Gilbert, the owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Controversy now between Rush Limbaugh and the African American, a number of African American leaders, with respect to statements made by Rush Limbaugh about the fact that black baseball players should be forever indebted to the late Steinbrenner, owner of the Yankees, for making Negroes wealthy. Al Sharpton has done a beautiful retort, if you will. I fully agree on the record with the Reverend Jesse Jackson. Dan Gilbert was, and we said this on last week's program, though, and
yes.
So for those of you that, you know, may want to question it, all you have to do is go on demand and call us up, and you will be able to recapture the program. But I fully concurred with what the Reverend Jesse Jackson and some others have said. Dan Gilbert was way out of pocket, if you will, and Rush Limbaugh, as usual, was way out of pocket.
Yeah, and Mr. Edwards, we have a call.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Go ahead, caller. What's your name? Where
are
you calling from?
Hello. Hi, guys. This is Marvin. Hey, Ron. Hey, Don. How you guys doing? Sorry,
I'm
running late.
All right, Marvin. What's up? Okay.
Oh, nothing. No, there's not a lot of time. I did get a chance to listen to a little bit of what's going on. I got the Bogart family reunion, Ron, by the way, down at the depot. You might want to stop by because I know you've been with our family for years. But what I wanted to say was, you know, people are talking about being involved, you know, if, especially those people who were the victims of homicide. Hello?
We got you. Go ahead. We're here.
Yeah, yeah. Especially the people that were victims of the homicide. Well, real quickly, you know, we started a group to really just try and do some really immediate kinds of things, like, you know, just get out there in the community and just start touching people, communicating with people. Our next meeting is at 1931 West Broadway this Thursday, 6 o'clock to 8 or 9. So people who are interested in really making a change, actually participating in change and not talking, please plan to attend. Thanks, guys, and I look forward to hearing the show next week.
Okay. All right, thank you. Okay, take care. Mr. Allen, if you want to begin to wrap it up, it looks like we're in the last minute and a half, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, we are. I would like to invite the listeners that are in Minneapolis to Minneapolis Television Network tomorrow, Sunday at 5 p.m. for your show, Mr. Edwards, Black Focus. It comes on every Sunday on Minneapolis Television Network. That is Channel 17 at 5 p.m. Also, Mr. Edwards' column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder every week. You can look for Mr. Edwards' column. And I also like to invite people to my two blogs, the Independent Business News Network. You can either search Google search that name or go to www.ibnnnews.com or USA Radical Black. And you can find that by going to USA Radical Black. We'll be back next week at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. We invite you to participate by calling the 1-800 number, sending us an email, dropping us a line, or if you want to do it, it'd be great. And we also like you to become our fan on Facebook. On Point now has a Facebook fan page. Just go there and click like and leave your comments, suggestions, show suggestions. We really appreciate it. That's it for me, Mr. Edwards. Any last closing words?
Nothing at this end, but we will come back a little bit with the controversy involving our brother Al Sharpton and Rush Limbaugh.
Yes.
Kudos once again to Brother Sharpton for standing up for the African-American community, but it's a community that's going to have to stand up for itself. Don, it's been a pleasure, and have a safe trip back from Washington, and we'll talk a little bit more about the NAACP in Kansas City this week, in which we covered as a part of a another responsibility and obligation. But once again, thank you for allowing us to come into your homes and to come into your life.
Thank you.
90.7 New Life FM. Hey, I promised a song by Kim Hopper, and I'm not going to, you're not going to let me get away without playing it. I know you. So I'm going to play it here in just a second. But I found this quote from Martin Luther. He said, "My temptations have been my masters in divinity." I'll say it again. "My temptations have been my masters in divinity." If you think about that, you know it's true for all of us, from Billy Graham to the worst sinner you've ever seen. And as Paul said, I'm the chief of sinners. It's a good quote to remember, one to keep us humble. Martin Luther for your Saturday night.